はい、おはようございます。おはようございます。はい、今日は朝もおはようから、レコードいらっしゃいましてありがとうございます。今日朝一のセッションは楽天の川口とカニオ、デミトリフが、楽天の事例、それからデブオプスの事例を紹介したいと思います。じゃあスライドの方を切り替えていただいてよろしいでしょうか。はい、まず前段、先に私の方、川口の方からデブオプス、それからエンタープライズアジャイル何なんだろうか、ちょっと概要を説明させていただきます。その後でカニオの本当のリアルライフの事例の方に行きたいと思います。私、川口と申します。楽天でアジャイルコーチとして働いております。普段は各現場ですね、各チームの方に行ってどういうふうにアジャイルをやっていくかっていうのをお手伝いをしていく、それからトレーニング、もうちょっと広くいろんなチームに対して必要があればトレーニングをして、アジャイルの始め方、スクラムの始め方を教えるような仕事をしています。で、エンタープライズアジャイル、まあ、いろんな定義があるかと思います。皆さんもちょっと聞いたことあるかもしれませんが、今日はこの定義でいきたいと思います。エンタープライズアジャイルとは、英語で言うとアジャイルインエンタープライズと私は捉えています。大きな企業の中でどうやってアジャイルを進めていくか、それをひっくり返すとチームを超えたレベルですね、チームのレベルのアジャイルはいいでしょう、チームを超えたレベルでどうやってアジャイル開発手法を進めていくかと、このあたりがエンタープライズアジャイルの課題かなというふうに思っております。で、これはマイケル・サホタさんからいただいたスライドなんですけども、エンタープライズアジャイル、今私たちがやっているエンタープライズアジャイルってこういう形かなと思います。青いところが実際既存の大企業の組織、大きいかどうか分かりませんけど企業組織ですね、既存の企業組織そのままで、まずは各グループ、各チームにアジャイルのプラクティスを適用して、この緑のところがアジャイルです。なのでエンタープライズをちょっとずつアジャイルにしていきましょうと、エンタープライズの中でアジャイルをやっていきましょう。これがエンタープライズアジャイルの現状かなと思います。で、僕たちはもうちょっと先行きたいんですね。本当はです。今できるかどうか別として、本当はちょっと先に行きたい。アジャイルの組織自体をアジャイルに少しずつしていきたい。アジャイルエンタープライズというふうに言ってますけども、で、この左上にレジリエンスって書いてあります。変化に強い。なんかいろんな問題が起きたときにより安定してものが作れる。一方でアンチフラジャイル。一方で安定している。変化に対して無理に対応するのではなくて、フラジャイルに対応するのではなくて、きちっとものを出していける。こういうアジャイルエンタープライズを目指したいというところが私たちの着眼点になります。で、ちょっと整理したんです。アジャイルエンタープライズに向けて、そのエンタープライズアジャイルの課題ってどんなことがあるだろうかと、3つのレベルがあるかなと思いました。1つ目はチーム運営上の課題、当然ですね、チームそのものがどうやっていくか、それから2番目、チームを超えたチーム外との調整の課題で、3つ目が組織全体の課題です。ちょっと例を出しましょう。例えばチームの課題ってどんなことがありますか。これは日本の企業では非常に多いと思うんですけども、プロジェクトチームの解散の問題です。多くの企業ではプロジェクトが終了したときにチームが解散してしまう、その時点で取っていた予算が終わりますから、解散してしまうということがよく起こります。で、解散してしまうと、残念ながらチームに蓄積されてきた多くのノウハウが、なくなってしまいます。もちろんそれぞれの人は何か覚えてるんですけれども、チームとしてのノウハウはなくなります。例えばどんな人にアクセスすると、どんな人と仕事をすると話がスムーズに進むのかとか、どんなふうにデプロイすれば早くリリースできるのか、どうやったら承認が取れるのか、どうやったら予算が取れるのか、さまざまなノウハウがチームには蓄積していると思います。でもこれが解散してしまうと一旦なくなってしまう。で、これって実はマイクロソフトさんでも同じことが起きていた。これは昨日話してもらいました、この場所で話してくれましたサム・グッケンハイマーさんが、ビジュアルスタジオのチームで、13年働かれているそうなんですけども、2000年代から2000働かれていて、その時に起きているのがこういう話です。 マイクロソフトでは製品リリースにこぎつけると通常は人事異動が行われます。社員にとってこの人事異動はキャリアを開発し新しい挑戦を行って個人の満足度を高める好機です、チャンスです。だけどもこれは短期的には一種の記憶喪失状態を生み出すことになります。これが2000年代に行われてたことですね。2010年のビジュアルスタジオ2010で行われてたことです。でその後サムさんたちはやり方を変えました。ビジュアルスタジオオンラインということにして継続的にずっとリリースし続ける重量課金のソフトウェアに変えました。することで常にチームが維持される方向に進んでいたということになります。はい、で整理したエンタープライズアジャイルの課題のうち、私の見たところ多分このあたりがデブオプス効果がありそうかなというふうに思っています。もちろんデブオプスで全てのエンタープライズアジャイルの課題が解決されるわけではないと思っていますが、ただ一部はかなり効果があるのではないかというふうに思っています。ちょっと一つずつ見ていきますね。一つ目、チームの熟成不足です。これは、やはり多くの企業で、予算を取ってから何をやるんですか、工数を見積もってから、工数が見積もれれば予算を取る、予算を取ってから人が集まる、こういうやり方をしているとどうしても最初の起動ですね、チームビルディングに時間がかかります。その際実際の作業にあたる開発チームが見積もっているわけでもないので、見積もった時と違う人たちが来るんですね。そうすると計画の精度も悪くなります。予算を取って人を集めて順に進めていくとどうしても精度が悪いという問題が起こります。で対策としてはもちろん先ほどありましたが記憶喪失の問題もありますので、なるべく一回作ったチームを維持したい、ちっちゃなまま、多く人を集めるとやっぱり解散しなきゃいけなくなったりするので、小さなチーム、なるべく小さなチームでスモーチームを維持していく、それからチームのスタートアップ始めるときにはスクラムの研修などいやメンバーのスキル分析などを行って、なるべく早く立ち上がるようにすると、このあたりが、改善案になってくるかなと思います。もちろんチームの中で定期的な計画と振り返りをやっていきましょう。2つ目、これも少し似てるんですが、チーム内の今度は立ち上がった後ですね、チーム内のスキルが不足している問題、デブオプスでコンティニュアスデリバリーで早くリリースしたいとしてもテストがその間にできない、十分に自動テストが書けない、そういうことですと、実際は最終的にはやっぱり手動のテストが入ってきて遅くなる、こういう問題が起きます。ですのでこれに関してもこれビジネス側からも問題で、予定した成果物が出てこないということになるんですね。ですのでそれが起きないように、実際に社内でどんな事例が行われているか、事例共有会や技術勉強会を行って、皆さんのスキルを高めていこう、それからスクラム研修やメンバーのスキル分析、それあとこれ追加にテストのコーディング、テストをどうやってコーディングしていくか、これ意外と各企業やまだ学校でも教えてないケースが多いので、どうやってテストを自動化していくか、コーディングに落としていくか、このあたりの研修がサポートになるかなと思っております。それからチーム外のところに行きまして、チーム外との調整負担ですね。これまさにデブオプスの中心的な課題でもあるんですが、職能別組織、デブとオプスなんで分かれているかというと、多分過去になんか障害があったり不安定なことがあったりして、運用の担当の方はとか、インフラの担当の方はやっぱり一箇所に集めましょうと、専門家は専門家同士うまく議論して進められるように一箇所に集めて、マネジメントもそこに集約しましょう、こうして大きな会社ではだんだん機能が分割してきたというのがこれまでの流れかなと思います。そうすると不思議なことに、分割されたプロフェッショナルのその組織では人が足りなくなるんですね。なぜかインフラ担当はいつも人が足りない。でそれはなぜかというと、インフラ担当はそのインフラを何とかするっていうことによってお金をもらうわけです。なのでなるべく遊んでる時間を少なくしたいという方向が働きますので、どうしても稼働率が 100% に近くなる。その分他の、そこをお願いしたいアプリケーションとか、開発の担当からのお願いに対しては、いやうちいっぱいいっぱいなんでちょっと、もちろん順番に処理していきますが、で急が積まれていくんですね、仕事の急が、どうしてもやっぱ反応が遅くなると。 それから、まあ、調査予算とか教育の予算とかも、まあ、それぞれのところで行われていくので、インフラの担当の人しかインフラの研修を受けない、組織を超えた情報共有が起こりにくくなるという問題があります。それから承認プロセス、まあ、チームを超えた課題、チームの中でまあ承認できないというのはそもそも問題なんですが、なぜか、なぜかってことね、よくあるのはチームで決めたことをさらに、部長さん、課長さん、部長さん、それからもっと偉い人に承認をもらわないとリリースができない、こういう組織体制になっている、運用体制になっている、会社多いかなと思います。まあ、実際は多分過去にやっぱこれも障害が起きたりとかしてですね、それに再発を防ぐ目的で、この承認が増えていくということが、まあ、よく会社でいろんな会社で起きているかなと思います。まあ、これに対してはそうではなくて、明確なプロダクトオーナーをチームの中に置いて、このプロダクトオーナーが、そのプロダクトの CEO として、OK だったらこれはリリースするんです、明日でも今日でももうすぐリリースするんです、バグの対策かもしれませんし AB テストかもしれませんがすぐリリースするんですっていうことを、できるようにしましょうと。でもちろんそれができるようにマネジメントは一歩下がってそれのお手伝いをしましょうということですね。まあ、承認プロセスに関してはもう一つ別の話がありまして、なぜか、一つずつ上の人にこの承認をもらいに行くと、一つずつ上の人が別の意見をくれるっていう問題があります。課長さんが良かれと思って、いやこうじゃないって意見くれると、部長さんがいやこれもこうだよね、いやそういうのは分かるけども俺はこうだと思う、良かれと思ってどんどん次の意見をくれるんですけど、そうすると、まあ、全体どんどん遅くなっていくと、もちろんそれに対して対策しなきゃいけないんで、はい、それから最後、開発者の関係者への成果物のデモやフィードバックを、定期的に行っていきましょうと。はい、で、ちょっと DevOps の話、この辺に DevOps が効きそうって話はしたんですが、じゃあ DevOps って何でしょうかにちょっと入っていきたいと思います。 DevOps の源流は、DevOps、一応この説明いらないと思うんですけど、 Dev はデベロップメントです、 Ops はオペレーションです。多分これ昨日1日見てましたけど誰もこの説明してないんで、まさか間違ってる人いないと思いますが一応入れました。開発者と、オペレーションの中にはインフラの担当も含まれると思います。この人たちが一緒にやりましょうということです。で、DevOps 重なると、まあ、単に一緒にやりましょうではなくて、結果的にはビジネスに対してのフィードバックをなるべく高めましょうということになっています。単純に言うと、従来のやり方はそれぞれ部署が分かれていたので、部署間でだんだんお願いをしていくっていうハンドオフですね、引き継ぎというのがたくさん行われる。それから承認しなければいけないので、まあ、その各部門の上長の方が承認をする、こういうプロセスで回ってきました。新しいやり方、 DevOps のやり方はそれをスモールチームに集めて、自動化することで、スピードを上げましょうということになります。で、もともと最初に DevOps という話が、すごく有名になったのはフリッカーのプレゼンテーションですね。ベロシティカンファレンスで2009年に行われたプレゼンテーションが、DevOps を有名にしました。で、その時にどういうことを言っていたか、具体的に何を言っていたかと、まず1番目、オートメイティッドインフラストラクチャー、自動化されたインフラストラクチャー。2番目が、共有されたバージョンコントロール、バージョンコントロールシステム、ないしバージョンコントロール自体を、皆さんで共有しましょう。3番目、ワンステップでビルドしてそのままデプロイできるように自動化しましょう。ワンクリック押したらそのまま本番に出ていくようにしましょうと、ね。そのためのスクリプトを組みましょうとか、そのための自動化をやっていきましょう。4番目、フィーチャーフラグ。フィーチャーフラグは最近だんだん有名になってきていて、Azure でも、フィーチャーフラグがサポートされてきているようなんですけども、AB テストとか、皆さんご存知かもしれません。リリースして、本番にアプリケーションをまずはリリースしてから、機能によってスイッチで、切り替えられるようにする、というやり方ですね。で、これが AB テストの基盤になっていたり、それから最近はカナリアリリース、とりあえず一部のお客さんにリリースして問題なかったらダーッと他のお客さんに広げていこうと、ユーザーに広げていこうと、こういうカナリアリリースをやるための基盤としてもフィーチャーフラグが使われています。 5番目、メトリックスの共有ですね。本番でどういうお客さんが使っているのか、いつどのタイミングで使っているのか、どんな問題が起きているのか、これを、リアルタイムに全ての皆さんに、全ての関係者に共有できるようにしましょう。あ、ごめんなさい。それから IRC、あのチャットですね。6番目はあのチャットオプスとも最近言われますが、チャットのところでさあ今日デプロイするぞってつぶやけばそのままデプロイが行われるようにしたり、それから問題が起きた、エラーが起きました、これをチャットにフィードバックしてチャットで常に議論しながらその問題に対策できるように、このあたりが DevOps のところのに入ってきています。でこのフリッカーの発表の後、各社、ウェブの、まあ、ジャイアントと言われる思われる会社から、まあ、DevOps という言葉を使ったり、まあ、使わなかったりなんですけども、同じようなことをやっているよという発表が相次いでおります。で、まあ、ウェブの大きな会社は、まあ、そうだよなという感じ、あの別にこの言葉がつく前から当然やっているよねという感じだと思いますけど、ちょっと僕が驚いたのは、まあ、マイクロソフトとかあのヤフーさん、あの米国のヤフーさんですね、結構あの企業としての年数を経っている会社さんも DevOps に行くということを言い始めたと。マイクロソフトさんは、マイクロソフトはあのサム・グッケンハイマーのホワイトペーパーが出てますけども、あの昨日あの発表があったように DevOps に進むという話をやったという事例がありました。ヤフーの方は、いや、あの米国ヤフーの方は去年あの楽天テクノロジーカンファレンスで発表していただいてます。ビデオがありますので、よかったらあのこの楽天テクノロジーカンファレンスでググっていただいて、ビデオをご覧いただければと思います。でこうした大きな会社、年を経ったあの会社でも DevOps、組織の壁を越えて進んでいくんだということを、まあ、大きくやっているというのが、まあ、僕にとってはとてもショックでした。で楽天でも、実は、徐々に進めています。いろんな部署がありますので、まあ、部署ごとにだんだん進めているんですが、いくつかの事例を昨年のテクノロジーカンファレンスで発表いたしました。今日はその中のまた一つの新しい事例を、まあ、カニオの方から話してもらいます。でちょっと余談になりますが、今年のテクノロジーカンファレンスは、10月22日に行いますので、ぜひ皆さんあの興味があったら来てください。アジャイルサムライのほにゃさんとか、メアリポほにゃほにゃさんとかが、まあ、来る方向になってますので、あの、まあ、ちょっと気になる方はぜひチェックしておいてください。はい。はい、でどうして DevOps なんでしょうか。ちょっとまとめなスライドになってくるんですけども、まあ、僕の見たところ、これは僕の考え方なんですけど、多分アジャイル、昨日も牛尾さんが言ってましたが、アジャイルが多分基本にあるだろうと。でアジャイルで何を言ってるかっていうと、お客さんの価値、顧客価値に集中したソフトウェア作りをしましょう。それからスモールチーム、小さなチームで進めて、技術的なやり方、スキルを高めて、そのニーズにタイムリーにマッチするものを出していけるようにしましょうというのがアジャイルのやり方ですね。でそこに後でクラウドが出てきました。クラウドは仮想化を使って自動化を用いて、ワンストップでセルフサービスでエンジニアそのものがリリースできるようにしましょうと。これがクラウドですね。でアジャイルとクラウド、これが揃えば、まあ、なんとかなるじゃないですか。開発のやり方もうまくなって、リリースも早くなって。だけどこれスタートアップの会社だと全然問題ないんです。これでできるんです。できない会社があったと。どこにあったでしょうか。これがエンタープライズ、大きな会社ですね。何の問題かというと、組織的な問題。組織が分かれていてコラボレーションがうまくいかない。クオリティを考えるために、リリースのために大きな QA の時間を取らなきゃいけない。品質保証に3ヶ月かかる。こういう問題があるので、じゃあ解決策として DevOps を考えたというのが、基本的な流れかなと私は思っています。ですのでスタートアップにどうやって勝つかなんですよ。で大きな会社では、組織が、まあ、当然分かれています。デブとオプスが分かれていたり、テストが分かれていたりすると。でその間では、引き継ぎがたくさんあったり、承認プロセスがある。でもこれって小さな会社、スタートアップでは起こらないですよね。常にリアルタイムでお話をして、すぐリリースができる。クラウドを使えば別に新しくインフラ買うこともない。大きな予算もいらない。この圧倒的なスピードの差、どうするかっていうのが DevOps の手段になります。まあ、単純に言うと、引き継ぎをやめましょうと。引 引き継ぎやめてどうするかっていうと、まずはスモールチームで一緒にやりましょう、それから自動化をしましょう。でスモールチームっていうと、日本だと結構同じ種別の人たち、開発者が6人集まって、はい、スモールチームでアジャイルやりましょうっていうケースが、まあ、たまたまあるかなと思います。同志の人が集まりやすいんですけど、実際はプロダクトに関わる人たちはいろいろいます。なのでいろんな人たちが集まって週に1回会議をしてプロダクトを決めていきましょうみたいなことをやるんですけど、まあ、そうではなくて、それぞれの代表するもしくはスキルを持った人たちが1箇所に集まって、まあ、お互いに仕事もシェアをしながら進めていこうというのは本来のスモールチームです。クロスファンクショナルで、スキルをすべてカバーをして、かつお互いを信頼し合いながらやっていく、これが本当のスモールチームですね。それからもう一つがオートメーション。従来の、まあ、先ほどもありましたが、従来のやり方ですと各部署をまたいでいろんな引き継ぎがあります。これをまあ自動化することによって、一度にワンクリックで進められるようにしましょうと、まあ、あらかじめ設計するってだけですよ。あらかじめ各分野で必要なことを設計しておくってことです。ですのでセルフサービスでデプロイできる、それからより早く、より頻繁にリリースをすると。でその結果、全体のバリューストリームですね、何か必要になってから、うまくいくまで、リリースできるまでをなるべく短くする、全体としてですね、これを目指していくこと、このあたりが DevOps の、主な着眼点になってくるかなと思います。でちょっと、まあ、つまらない説明が長く続いてしまったんですが、そろそろ、実際の事例に入っていきたいと思います。じゃあ同僚のカニオの方から、本当の実際に楽天の中で行われているデブロフスの事例を話していただきます。ここからちょっと英語になりますので、ドツレシーバーのご用意をお願いいたします。
Thank you, Koguchi-san. This was a great overview of the Agile and Enterprise and DevOps practices. So, just a quick information about me. I'm Azure MVP, Azure Advisor, and I also run a Tokyo Azure Meetup where we meet and talk about Azure and other broader cloud topics. So please, if you're interested, check this, this meetup. And I want to continue with the topic that started yesterday during the DevOps panel. If you remember, if you were here, we were talking about black ships, a symbol of opening Japan to the world and accepting the best practices and enriching the Japanese community. So of course, a lot of things changed from the moment when these black ships arrived to Japan, and now Japan is the leading country in the world. We are leading in so many different aspects of the lifestyle. But also, there is so much to learn more. So I think in the new context, we have a new black ships. These are the people that are changing the lives globally. So these are people that are coming here to Japan and explaining innovative ideas that are changing the world. So these people, they were brought on annual basis in Japan by Rakuten. And if you combine this fact with another information that Kawaguchi-san is actually one of the main drivers of DevOps in Japan, you start to think how Rakuten is pushing innovation in business, software development, and also DevOps. And you start to think, is this a coincidence? And my answer is no. Everything is tied to our corporate culture that is basically encoded in five basic rules. Always improve, always advance, passionately professional, hypothesize, practice, validate, shikumika, maximize customer satisfaction, and speed, speed, speed. And if you remember from yesterday, the main principles that were highlighted by the DevOps gurus from Microsoft, maybe you'll start to think that actually, our corporate culture principles in Rakuten and these DevOps principles are not so different. So if we start to map them one by one, we can come up with this sample mapping. So let's say with always improve, always advance, we want to eliminate the technical debt. We don't want to be blocked in any single moment by debt that prevents our fast release to production. On the other hand, as Rakuten employee, I want to be very passionate, be part of a team, and feel that they have impact on the company's success. And also, I have the freedom and the responsibility to deliver the best result at any single time that can be shipped to an end customer. Another very important thing is rule number 3. We try to come up with idea quickly. test them, gather the information, and after that, understand the findings. If they're successful, develop them. If they're not, change them quickly. Another one, maximize customer satisfaction. What we do, we always have the customer in our mind. The value is what we give to the customer and how useful it's for him. And speed, speed, speed. Here, we want to remove any blocker that prevents us, again, from releasing something quickly to production. Usually, buying infrastructure, applying complicated pipelines to get access to this infrastructure, it's a real pain for the development process. So if we go to the cloud, if we automate this process, this will increase our speed. So now going from this corporate level, we all agreed that we have the right environment at Rakuten to adopt DevOps. So let's see how this translates on a team level. This is my team, mobile ecosystem team. We're focused on building backend services for mobile scenarios. All our solutions are designed, implemented, and hosted in Microsoft Azure, period. So everything is for the cloud. So we can describe us as mobile-first, cloud-first team. Of course, we gain more knowledge. We are getting more and more complicated projects. And for that, we need to optimize our processes. So here, we need DevOps, successful DevOps practices. We identified six major factors to have successful DevOps in our team, and I believe in our organization as well. So let's start with the process. The process is very, very important for us because it gives us expected results and also discipline. Also, we are able to know what are the current blockers through the standard ceremonies in Scrums and to deal with them quickly. So this doesn't prevent us from delivering the results in the end of the sprint. The next one, and maybe the most important one, is the team. With my team, we experimented a lot. First, we assigned all the developers to a single team working on a single feature. This didn't work very well. People were stepping on each other's toes. Then we went to the other extreme. We assigned developer per project, and we lost the collaboration. Now, we have feature teams. This means that in one team, we have developers, QA, DevOps, project managers, product managers. So they act as a single entity. They are fully responsible for a set of features. They basically own them. So they decide the future, how they'll develop. Of course, there is alignment with the high-level management requirements. But now the team is owning the service, the feature. Next, DevOps, before everything, is a philosophy. But if we want to measure the success, we need to see something a little bit more concrete. We need to see the processes. We need to see even the tools. So for us, the tools, it's a great way to see how mature we are. Today, I want to talk a little bit more about build server environment because it's a very, very key for our development success. So our build servers are the center of our development process. They almost act as a team member. They're part of our communication channels, Skype, HipChat, they're sending automatic messages when the build triggers or build fails or build is scheduled. So we know what's going on with them all the time. Another great point is our team is actually spread between four locations, Tokyo, San Mateo, California, Cambridge, UK, and Bangalore, India. So the build server is this single entity that is used by all these teams together. So it has a very important role. It's the main collaborator between us. So, of course, it's responsible for development. It's responsible for deployment and building. But also, it manages our configuration, resource provisioning, and it smartly manages its own resources. But the most important task for me is that this build server or the build process as a whole actually governs and protects the code quality. So for that, we try to automate as much as possible and to implement best practices. So for example, we ask the developers to constantly and build often during the development cycle, so they can earlier identify problems that are coming with the build. Also, we had a big bottleneck with the code review process. So we decided to give a little bit more freedom to the developers, but at the same time, we're enforcing good practices through automation during the build process that I'll share shortly. Also, we have gated builds. This means that we will not merge in code to our development branch, centralized development branch, if we don't have like a minimum amount of successful builds. So let's concentrate here on what are the steps that we follow on a high level with our build process. We start with building the projects, running unit tests, and then we calculate the code coverage of the unit tests. If we are under certain amount that we agreed on team basis, what will be the acceptable level, we'll fail the build. And then the code coverage should be increased. Then we have a style cop. Style cop help us to protect the quality of our code, but enforcing certain rules on the code implementation. Then we have another tool that is called SonarCube that analyzes all our code base and basically points us vulnerabilities, problems that need to be fixed. So if we fail the check on any of these steps, we'll fail the build until it's fixed. Then the next interesting step is backup. We are backing up some resources like databases that are very crucial for our production environments. Then we deploy, run integration tests, and of course everything is done in the context of Microsoft Azure. So this is how it looks our build environment. We have one server, four agents, and one dedicated agent for SonarCube where the reports are stored. And again, we have four teams using it. We are using TeamCity, but this easily applies to any build server that you like. For automation, we rely on a standard components for .NET and Azure. We use a lot of PowerShell. Recently, we start to use more Azure Resource Manager templates for provisioning infrastructure. We use Azure Automation for synchronizing our API gateway that we have provisioned in several locations around the world. And also, we use Azure Backup to backing up our virtual machines for the build server. So if we go to the next level, we start to think, okay, we have the tools, we have the team, we have the process. Now we need to select what kind of cloud services we're going to use so they will give us more benefit and that will help us to develop a real high-quality projects. So my team, we really focus on platform as a service. Platform as a service gives us a lot of benefits, but also limit the control over the physical environment. So when we select a platform as a service solution, we need to be careful that we will not be limited in our future use. So we are big users of Azure Web App. This is a solution in Azure that is perfect for hosting websites and web APIs. Also, it allows us to have like a long-running background process, managed as a single entity next to our APIs and websites. With Azure Web App, we are able also to expose internal APIs that are actually not available direct use from internet via a connection with ExpressRoute. So this connection goes directly to our data center, and with our web apps, we are able to provide these APIs to our end consumers. In the context of DevOps, Azure Web App is one of the most interesting services in Azure. It comes right out of the box with support of different environments. Here I listed staging, but you can have like a pre-production or anything else that you want to run right next to your production environment. It's super easy to configure. It's just a few clicks away. Rollback and green and blue deployments are also very easy to be implemented with this, the same feature. It's called slots, and you can easily implement it. It's very, very, very well fits in the platform as a whole. We're also able to do testing in production or high-level A/B testing without integrating any framework. Auto-scaling is maybe the major feature that really, really it's important for us because we don't want to be to wake up in the middle of the night and realize that some of our services or some of our data entities become so viral that the whole environment is down. So we configure our auto-scaling rules so the environment expands and accommodates the traffic. Performance testing is also a very important thing. We try to have a very good understanding how our service will perform under a real production load by hitting it heavily with load tests before release. So I want to talk a little bit more about the deployment. There's so much to say about web app, this 1 hour won't be enough. So I want to focus your attention exactly on the deployment process. So here on this diagram, you see standard, very interesting deployment process that is called AutoSwap. So here, what can happen is, let me see. So here, the developer checks in code. This goes to our repository, in this case, Git. Then we have a webhook configured with our staging slot. So we will be deploying immediately after the check-in the code to the staging slot. Again, the concept about production and staging slot. Basically, you have two websites that leave and are hosted next to each other. The interesting part is the production slot is getting the production traffic. And the staging slot is just sitting next to it, accommodating various scenarios. So here, we'll be deploying to the staging slot. And when the deployment is ready, the system automatically will swap production and staging. This allows us to avoid any downtime and also to have cold start. So basically, we deploy after a second when the website it's already in a workable mode, we push it to a production. However, I want to achieve a little bit more. AutoSwap is fine, but actually what will happen if I push changes that for some reason have issue, and I've never been able to test with a real production traffic. So for that, I want to implement this diagram here. So let me explain you. It looks a little bit complicated, but it's actually not that complex. So first, we have here, this is the internet traffic, mobile clients, web clients, you name it. And then this traffic is hitting a load balancer. The load balancer is actually invisible for us. It's managed by the service. But actually, the load balancer decides what portion of the traffic is going to the production or staging slot. So I'll be having a PowerShell script that will do a few stuff. First, as in the previous step, we'll be deploying the code to the staging slot. Then the PowerShell script will do some maintenance of the existing data that I'll explain here in this branch. But for now, let's focus. First step, we deploy to a staging slot. Next step, we start to change the routing of the traffic. We start to send portion of the traffic, of the production traffic, to our staging slot. So we can test with real production traffic what's going on. The staging slot has a dedicated application inside instance. This is a tool that allows us to monitor our solutions. Do we have errors or not? If we have an error, then through a webhook, we trigger Azure Function. Azure Function is something very similar to AWS Lambda. So this is event-driven computing. Something is happening, and then you do something based on that event. So in our case, we have an error, we'll do something. What we'll do, we'll create a record in Azure table, just one line. The PowerShell, in the meantime, is constantly checking this table. Do we have any entries? Which will mean we have errors. So if we find an error here, what will happen? We will stop the swapping, and we'll never push our newly deployed logic to a staging slot to production. If everything is okay, we'll swap. This gives us a little bit more certainty what will happen in production. So let me show you how this all look. So this is actually, just I want to duplicate my screen because it's a little bit difficult to work like that. Okay, so this is my PowerShell script. In the beginning, I have some constants. This is not so important. This can be parameters for your. First, I have a function to authenticate. I'm passing my credentials so I can authenticate against Azure. Then I'm creating package. This is what we'll be using for deploying our API. We're using MS Build, nothing so complicated. Then we are publishing the web app. Based on the package that we have from the previous function, we'll be publishing the web app. This is also standard stuff. Then We have a little bit of functions, few functions that are working with actually Azure Functions. Working with Azure Functions is very easy. You just make a web request. So now it's the time to show you how this looks. So Azure Functions is a very cool new feature. A lot of people have said that this is the future of PaaS in Azure. So definitely take a look. So let's see. I have three Azure Functions here. So this is the Azure function that will basically create an entry in an Azure table if we have an error. So on the top, you have a URL that identifies these Azure functions. Then you can post payload to these Azure functions. Actually, App Insights will do that thing for us. I'm doing some basic checks. I have some metadata in the payload, so I can say, is this a webhook that actually tells me that it's error? If so, I'll be adding item to Azure tables. Okay, this is the first Azure function. I have one more that basically constantly will go to the Azure table and check, do we have any entries? This will mean that I have errors, so I shouldn't proceed with the swapping my staging with production slots. And the last Azure function is basically cleanup. I, from time to time, I'm cleaning this Azure table, so I simplify a lot the logic. The only thing that I'm doing here, I'm aggregating a lot of operations for Azure table, and then I'm just deleting the items inside. So nothing fancy, but you see the power, how quickly is to operate with Azure storage, just a few lines of code. And everything is handled for you by the framework that powering Azure functions. Okay, so now going back to that, let me run it one more time. And together we do see what will happen. So now I'm logging in against Azure. I'm ready with creating the package based on the source code that I have locally. I published the website. Now I cleaned all the errors from my table that will track the errors. So this is the table. Before that, I have one item. After I refresh, it should be gone. Fortunately, not very responsive. But basically, you already start to see no errors. So currently here, we'll be checking for 100 seconds, do we have errors or not? And if we don't have, we'll swap the staging and production slots. Let me see. So this is Azure Storage Explorer that allows us to see what's going on in our tables. So I don't want to update. Fortunately, this is misbehaving, but you should trust me here. I don't have errors in the table. That's why I have this message. I just want to wait a little bit and show you that it will swap and publish to production. In the meantime, I can show you what's going on with the web app. So this is my web app. Here you can see how rich is web app as a solution. But I want to focus your attention to the traffic routing. We have two slots, one production, one staging. I already route around 20% of the traffic going to my staging instance, and 80% still goes to the production one. So this continues, and it soon should finish. It's around 100 seconds, so it's a minute and 40 seconds. Let's try one more time with that thing. Okay, this is something you probably updated. Okay, so if everything is okay, when we make a few more checks here, and it tells us, yeah, we don't have errors, now we revert all the traffic, 100% of the traffic, to go back to the production slot again, and now we are sure we don't have issues with the staging slot, the code looks well, verified with the production traffic, and now we are swapping the slots. This means that we are promoting our staging slot code to production. This will take a few seconds, and we should be done in a second. So after this finish, I'll run it one more time, but I'll show you like what will happen if we have issues with some errors. So for that, Because application insights takes a little bit time to track everything, I'll simulate the webhook activity from App Insights. I can show you how it's set up. It's very easy. On App Insights level, this is the App Insights configured with our staging slots. If you go here, I have like a one alert configured. This is called failed request, and the condition is if I have more than one fail request over 5 minutes, I want you to fire a request to this webhook. And this webhook is the same URL of the web Azure function that I showed you previously. Okay, let's see how. Okay, everything is done. We swap our staging changes are promoted to production. So now let's run it one more time. So everything will be the same. The only difference is this time I'll simulate error coming from App Insights. So I have, again, the Azure Functions URL, and I'll be posting sample payload to the Azure function. The important part is to have this status activated. This is a condition in my code. And as you can see, already we see that we don't have errors. So let me create an error. So this was accepted successfully. We get the status code 200, and also we get a message alert added to Azure table. And immediately after 10 seconds, we get an exception. Please fix before you proceed with the swapping. You have error. So this is very basic workflow, but I want to highlight something different. Here we have less than 100, around how many? We have around 200 lines of code, very basic PowerShell, that enables you to implement this workflow, which I'd say it's very powerful because it gives you additional level of certainty that your changes are not breaking changes, especially in production. Okay. So now next, Azure Web App is great. Microsoft did a great job. We can really handle now the deployment gracefully. But this is not everything, right? For example, I can share with you, we accumulate with some technical debt. And if you don't take care, it's become a blocker. So this is the case here on this slide. So we have several APIs. And these APIs are good, scale well. We have no issues. The only problem is that they share data context. And for some of our APIs, we use entity framework code-first approach. So this means that we have a classes in our code base that manage the schema of this database. And also, we have other APIs that are, let's say, not just APIs. They don't use entity framework. So they read the data from the database through a SQL driver. And then what happens if API 1 changes the schema? Then the rest of the APIs that depends on this schema and that are not updated start to fail. And this is a huge problem. And the issue is that we are sharing data context. So now the question is what we can do. There are multiple approaches. We can refactor the database. We can do a lot of stuff. But actually, the current trends are different. The current trend is that we are breaking services in a small, autonomous, simple services. Or microservices. The idea is not new, but the implementation and the approach is new. So there is various questions around this approach. I want to answer a few of them. First, what does it mean small? And there are different opinions for that. But for me, small is something that can be implemented very quickly, has like several hundred lines of code, and also it's very easy to manage by itself. The important part is number three. You should be able independently to scale and deploy these microservices. You should be able to be flexible, and you shouldn't be blocked if you want to change one service. Other service should be blocked by that. So now let's see our original scenario. Again, going from that and reaching here. The first thing that you see, we have more APIs. So this is good and bad. Good, I can scale them independently, I can deploy them independently, but I have more calls. And I also have like a few very hot spaces, API 3, API 8, API 6. And I realized that I need to make a trade-off. But the good news for me is that I can scale API 3 and API 8 independently, so I can cope up with additional traffic. But again, behind API 3 and API 8, actually I handle the breaking of this dependency of the database. So now we don't have direct calls to the database, everything is over HTTP, and each of these services have their own database that is managed independently behind the scenes. Or what we're achieving with that, we are breaking the traditional three-tier architecture to multiple tiers, depending on how many services you have. And this gives us a lot of freedom to mix and match, to deploy on various virtual machines or even containers, and to have very dynamic environment. So we don't want to know where our microservice is deployed. We just want to know that it's up and running and behaving as expected. So just to simplify or summarize, these are the things that we find out during our work with microservices. They should be very simple. Also, you can use the best tool for the job. It's perfectly okay to have a C# microservice as well sitting next to Node.js, Ruby, Java, because they all talk over HTTP, you don't care so much like what's behind the scenes. There are advantages and disadvantages to this approach, of course. The important thing is the thing should be loosely coupled. They shouldn't depend on each other. If something starts to fail, the other one should try to stay stable. And all this approach is great for a continuous delivery. One of the most important concepts about microservices is how you break your domain. You should create bounded contexts that actually each of the microservices will simulate. So this is one of the most difficult parts, but it takes a few iterations, and when you're done, everything should work fine. For example, imagine that you have an accounting department, you have to create a services for this accounting department. Maybe you create like one service for the whole accounting department that is used for other departments to request a work from accounting department. Maybe you have multiple services, depending on your organization. So one is for payroll, another one is for external bank transfer and stuff like that. So it's very important to study your business, because the microservices are actually tied very, very much to your business scenarios. Another very important thing, hide as much as possible the implementation. So no database exposed. The only thing that exposed should be the interface that you should keep stable. Apart from that, everything else should be kept secret. So if you need to optimize refactor, the other clients shouldn't be involved. Of course, if you need to change the contract, then you have to think about versioning and to be smart how you deploy the stuff. Automation is crucial. I think this is obvious. You have multiple, a lot moving parts that you need to manage. And the only way to do it is through automation. Also, try to reduce the cost as much as possible. Another important part is you shouldn't have any logic on the communication channels. Everything should be managed by the endpoints, by the API themselves. You should organize your environment that you can deploy every service independently from the rest. You should have like a very good visibility of what's going on with all of the services as a whole, as well as what is going on a single service basis. Because the complexity increases, you have more players, more APIs. You need to think how you can isolate failures. Your services will fail with the time for one or another reason, but the rest of the services should be aware how this will happen and what they should do about that thing. And I think when you reach the level when you can survive the test of the chaos monkey, when randomly you're switching off services, servers, removing internet connections, changing configurations, then you're good to go. Of course, it takes time, but actually it's very interesting when it's achieved. So as you can see, there are already a lot of challenges coming. The complexity of operating this system is very much increased. You need a lot of support of the DevOps process and the DevOps people in your team, because you have now so many more operation tasks. And you have to be very disciplined around your interfaces. Now you're also faced with the classic distributed computing problems. And potentially you have a lot of duplication of effort. You keep the services separated, separated code bases. So potentially you'll be implementing in a new service the same code that already exists in another place. And it's a little bit more complicated to test all that stuff. So for that, you need a very good tool in order to help you to actually cope with all these challenges. So one of the most interesting services currently in Azure is Azure Service Fabric. It's perfect for microservices scenarios. So the good news is already generally available. This means that there is like official support from Microsoft. It's already very well tested because it's coming with powering already a very well-performance services like Azure SQL, for example. He has a great tooling. And you just need to pay for the underlying virtual machines. There is no additional cost for the service itself. Oops. The other important part is that you can deploy Azure Service Fabric solutions to any location. You can deploy to AWS. You can deploy to your data center. You can deploy soon to Azure Stack. You can deploy to Linux. So it's a very versatile, a very interesting tool for your scenarios. And again, let me highlight these things. It helps you with the lifecycle management of your solutions. It's highly scalable. Just imagine, Azure SQL is run on that. Supports hybrid, 24/7 availability, and it's cost efficient. I already mentioned about that. I want to quickly to go over the key models that are supported by Azure Service Fabric. So you can use it as a reliable services, or you can use it as an actors. Actors, it's a little bit more abstract model that builds on top of reliable services. So reliable services come in two tastes, stateless and stateful. The stateless is the typical way that we work today. We have external database or external data repository that we persist our state. Stateful are more interesting. Stateful allow you to keep the data next to your compute logic. So imagine you have virtual machine that have both your data and your compute logic. And now it's getting interesting because you have multiple instances of your application. So how this data it's replicated and stay in sync. So this is the magic that Azure Service Fabric brings for you. And this is the one of the difficult distributed computing problems that need to be solved by you otherwise. So you have a standard, you have special type of collections, like a reliable dictionary, reliable list. And when you perform operation against them, you're sure that the data is replicated for you. And if your virtual machine, if your node goes down, your application won't be affected. So if you need to build an application that is very aggressive on requirements for low latency, probably stateful services is something for you. Because again, you will not need any more a database for this scenario. You will not need cache. You will not need queues or other services that will help you with data management. In terms of DevOps, in my opinion, this is currently the most advanced Azure service, Azure PaaS service that we can use. So we can host any framework on top of it. So there is no limitation, as you can see on the previous slide. We can handle both like Windows and Linux applications. It's very interesting how you update applications. You can end up in scenarios when you keep version 1 and version 2 of your application sitting next to each other because of different reasons. For example, your SDK cannot move to, or some of your clients cannot move to the next version, so you need to keep them both. But updates are done in a very smart way, so your application doesn't go down. We have zero downtime updates. Another very cool feature is automatic rollback. So if you deploy a new version of your application and it's bad, system actually detects the health of the new deployment. If it finds out that the deployment is bad, it will roll back and will stay with the previous version, basically you'll never end up in having your application in inconsistent state. And also, it's fully scriptable. So it's very easy to integrate with continuous integration, continuous delivery pipelines. Unfortunately, I will not have time to show you the demo, but if you have questions, please come to the booth and we'll talk about that. And I just want to finish with two more items. Something very important about the successful DevOps is data management. So for us, we are very passionate about monitoring our systems. So we have like a standard pipeline where we track errors with application insights. If we find out that there is an error, we get a call from PagerDuty that alerts the support team and we take actions. And then when we have the data, we want to understand what does it mean? What are the trends? So weekly, we review all the errors that are happening with our systems. We try to find patterns, bad patterns that we need to fix with with a new solution. So basically, we need to architect a new solution. And then when we are sure that we find a good solution, we architect it, we implement it, we share it with the whole company and the whole department. So for us, these six components that I highlighted here help us to implement efficient DevOps scenarios and practices. We are on a long journey, and we are just starting, but we're already seeing results coming back. So I urge you, go and check Azure Web App, Azure Service Fabric, read more about DevOps, really invest in automation. It's difficult, but it pays off. You saw what we can do with 200 lines of PowerShell, and 200 it's because we have so many others, so many white spaces. It's very basic. Everything in Azure can be automated today. So invest in automation, invest in CI, CD pipelines, and you see how you'll be able, again, to focus on the things that you're really passionate. Develop on new features, exploring new features, and basically bringing more value to the business instead of spending things on maintaining systems that need to be improved. Thank you very much. I want to ask you to fill your questionnaire. And if you have questions, please come to the FAQ session in the other part of the venue. I will be able to answer more questions, and I'll be able to show you the other demo that I didn't have time to show today. And this is it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.